This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We're all part of a global capitalist economy, a system that promised to benefit the rich and the poor alike. Yet youth unemployment rate has been on the rise, salaries have stagnated for close to 20 years despite the massive increase in cost of living, cost of education is at an all-time high, and the average millennial and Gen Z cannot even afford adequate housing on a single paycheck, despite it being a fundamental human right. So what went wrong and what's the solution here? I'm Darshan Johan and this is Think Left on Beyond the Ballot Box, a series that explores various issues through a leftist and socialist prism with Parti Socialist Malaysia. On the seventh episode of Think Left, we discuss billionaires and their role in our society. I'm joined by S. Arutchelvan. He's the deputy chairperson of Parti Socialist Malaysia. Welcome to the show, Arul. People often think of politics as just government and people, these two aspects. But I feel another vital aspect that most people don't think about is billionaires, and it doesn't billionaires and the ultra wealthy class as a whole. Arul, who are billionaires or the ultra wealthy, and what role do they play in our society and in politics?
Darshan, actually, those days, until when I reached university, I never heard about billionaires. We've been always hearing about millionaires then, you know.
Right.
We always talk about millionaires. But today, we don't hear about millionaires. We only hear about billionaires, you know.
Right.
And I think in future, we'll be only hearing about trillionaires. Actually, Marx used to consider the ruling classes. If you look at the billionaires during the slave age, the fellow who has the most slaves is the billionaire then, you know?
Right.
So that is the ruling class, the slave owners. And then during the colonial period, of course, the country which invades, go and exploits most of the poorer nations, the rich countries are glorified.
Right.
You know, but they bring sufferings all over the world. The feudal kings who go and invade another country. So this are the ruling classes, according to Marx, you know, the slave owners, the feudal kings, and in today's world, of course, the capitalist class. So in Marx terms, we have the ruling class and you have the state, the people who control the state. But today, even the state is being controlled by billionaires in many countries. If you look at elections, if you look at the big spenders in elections, where do they get their money from? Of course, behind them, they're sponsored by billionaires. In that context, all the big political parties, if you look at even in the US, the Republicans and Democrats, they have huge funders behind them. And it goes same to Malaysia, that politicians actually get funded, and that's how they use the money to buy votes.
So, you know, earlier you mentioned something interesting. You mentioned the word ruling class and you talked about how, you know, at one point it was slave owners. Then you also brought up examples like the feudal kings of yesteryears and things like that. So would you then say from a certain point of view that when we look at billionaires today with the amount of wealth they have amassed and all of that, that they are essentially, in a way, modern day monarchs?
Yeah, we could say that, you know, because you see, if today you look at the big time billionaires, they are the owners of Amazon, Facebook, you know. Those days, you physically go and rob money, take money from the people, you know. You invade a country like Africa, you take the gold from there, and you become rich. Right. Today it's done in different ways, of course. Today you have multinationals, you have economic colonizations, where, you know, big instruments like IMF, World Bank, you know, how they have rules set. So in today's world, of course, the current group of billionaires are actually those from the capitalist class, and they could be seen as the monarch because they control everything. Today, the workers are actually, they don't have much freedom. That is what Marx talks about, alienation, you know.
Right.
They have nothing to do with their life is just going to work, coming back, you know, and slaving to the ruling classes of today.
Now, I'm giving a sort of random trivia here. The average income in the US in 2018 was about $46,800 per year.
If this person who earns $46,000 a year spent no money at all, that means he doesn't buy food, doesn't buy a house, doesn't buy anything, it would take them over 21,000 years to accumulate $1 billion, just $1 billion. Huh? And if he wanted to make as much as the Amazon founder, Jeff Bezos, whose net worth is estimated to be more than hundreds of billions, let's say $130 billion in 2018, you have to count on almost 2.8 million years of work to be able to make that much money. Arul, how does a person become that rich? How do billionaires become billionaires?
I mean, Darshan, I mean, you know, it's amazing. I mean, I give you a more local example.
Right.
Like the Public Bank CEO, he earns 2.3 million monthly income.
Right.
Okay. And that works out to be 77,000 a day. And in a day, in 1 hour, of course, nobody works for 24 hours, but for 1 hour, his salary would be 3,200 an hour. So it will take a cleaner who's getting minimum wage 174 years to get the 1 month salary. You know? I mean, this is we are not talking about US, we are talking about Malaysia.
Right,
eh?
Right.
If you look at Malaysia today, income per capita is actually the total GDP divided by the population. That means a person in Malaysia should be earning monthly 13,700 ringgit. Monthly.
Wow.
You know? Just imagine a family of five. So you have to be, they'll be earning at least, you know, 60,000 ringgit or more than that a month. But that's not the case. That means a family normally would be earning maybe 5,000 a month. Husband, wife working, maybe 6,000, maybe 10,000. Even if they earn 10,000, that means 50,000 is going somewhere. You know, someone else is having that money. This whole story about billionaires working hard,
right?
There's no basis to it. If you look at where billionaires make money, it is actually a lot to do with where they put their money in, you know, and
right.
The money will grow by itself. So fortunes, most of them, they inherit their wealth from their family. Actually, Marx has a calculation for exploitation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He says he uses this term called surplus value. That means surplus value is also known as rate of exploitation. So for example, a lot of workers, for them to get their own salary, they maybe need to work 1 hour a day for them to get their own salary, you know. But then they work for 8 hours, some 12 hours. The remaining work, the wealth they created from that work actually goes to the capitalist class. So
right.
This is the rate of exploitation. Of course, some places it is more and some it is less. And this is what surplus value taken from the poor. Like, for example, British, when they invaded Malaysia, and then all the wealth of Malaysia, the tin, the rubber and all that, it makes the British society richer.
Right.
You see, there's a very interesting thing said by Jesus, you know. He said it's easier for a camel to pass through an eye of a needle than a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. So what he's trying to say is that why a rich cannot, very hard for them to go to heaven is simply because how did they become rich in the first place? That is why you have to impose laws like the minimum wage laws. You have to force people to at least give a minimum wage so the fella can survive. So you see, those days during slavery, they will make sure you have enough food to eat so that you die. You don't die. You continue to work. Recently, International Oxfam revealed in Asia, billionaires have increased their wealth by 74% during this pandemic. You know,
right?
Okay. So during the pandemic, the billionaires have become more rich, while 148 million others in the region have become more poor. So I think this is telling that there is a big disparity.
I think there's often a disconnect or dissonance because people might be, let's say, small business owners having an online shop on IG, for example, or might have a business with 30 to 40 staff, or even smaller micro businesses like nasi lemak sellers on the roadside. they might be wondering, wait, are you saying that we shouldn't do business and make money? So what's the difference between billionaires and ultra-wealthies and small business owners?
I think there's no problem in people who want to do business and all that.
Mm-hmm.
End of the day is, the workers who work under them, we must make sure that they get this. They must at least have this, at least this Maslow's basic necessity, you know, a decent house, healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
But today you see that because of privatization, healthcare is in the control of billionaires. Education, you want to get good education, you must go to private schools and you have to pay so much of money. You know, this is called neoliberalism.
Right.
So this is the problem today. So if that is why the socialists are fighting for public healthcare, you know, affordable education, because everything is controlled by what is called the 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So they create a propaganda that everybody can be rich. Everybody can be billionaire. That is not true at all. Everybody have to do work, but not everybody will earn enough, because the system is in such a way that it will ensure that not everybody can be rich. That is why you have this whole fight today about this movement of the 99% and so, and you know,
right,
fighting against the 1%.
You say these days there's the movement of the 99% against the 1%. But when I look around, I see a lot of regular people, even those who hate right-wing governments and understand corruption and all of these things, they worship billionaires and the ultra-wealthy. So many people worship the likes of Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, etc. Why?
I think this is actually very structural, actually. Marx says, people think the ideas in people's mind is the ideas of the ruling classes, you see. All the movies we see today, you know, movies and all this are funded by big billionaires. You know, people are behind movies, creating this whole idea that you can work hard, you can become a billionaire, you know. Then they make you feel that you must work, 8 hours of work is not enough. You are a lazy bum. So all these ideas are put into the workers, and you know, and they make the workers feel very disempowered. They make them feel that they can't fight for better wages. Something is wrong with them, you know. This is what Anthony Gramsci talks about, hegemony, you know.
Right.
The capitalist class have been able to create this hegemony, and you know, and that is why you need to create this counter hegemony, you know.
Right.
That is why you have movement telling people, you know, you work 4 days in a week is enough. That is why recently Malaysia reduced the working hours 3 hours. For me, that's a big victory, because you are actually got 3 hours for yourself extra, you know,
right,
compared to before. So this fight continues to happen. Now, this is the class war, you know, where the billionaire class keep making you feel guilty. So now we are fighting that, at least now in Malaysia, they're talking, you must give sokso for the housewife.
Right.
You know, only now in 2022, you know, because housework is never recognized as a work. So this for me is the entire class war. You see how the capitalists, they fight so strongly to bring migrant worker to this country. And then political parties will be arguing as if migrant workers are the cause of all problems, you know. They create poverty and then they create welfare homes. And who funds these welfare homes? And they feel very good about it, you know. If you see today, you know, a lot of money is made in the stock markets.
Right.
So it's very different than what they teach you, right? What your parents tell you to work hard, study hard, you know, you have to work hard, you know. And then they give you examples. The right-wing media will give example about one or two people who were poor before and now who are rich. And they give you this feeling that everybody can do that. But actually, you can't. How the capitalist system regulates itself is, you know, every time there's a recession is something unavoidable in the capitalist system. Every 10 years, you'll have a recession. When recession happens, the very, very rich companies will buy off the less companies. So what they will happen is, this is called accumulation.
Right.
That means the very rich buggers will buy the other fellas. They become even richer. So every 10 years, that is why in the world today, in spite of so much of growth, the income disparity among the rich and poor is always widening, because the very rich, the extreme rich people, Every time there's a recession, they make money out of it. During COVID also we saw, you know, the very people who really make a lot of money out of it. And so the system itself will make a lot of people poor, you see. But then they will use their machinery, their propaganda, to make it feel that people should work harder, you know, you should find new ways of making money. The capitalists always make you think that, you know, they make their world perfect and they try to make people fight among each other. They make the Malays, Chinese, Indians fight among each other. They make us fight among the foreigners, you know. Mm-hmm. They create all these problems, the racism, all this are created so that you don't talk about class issues.
And I guess for me, where the hard work argument also falls flat is that if hard work pays off, then the migrant worker working 16 hours a day, or the cleaner sweeping the roads in the morning and cleaning toilets at night, or the rubber tappers working till death will be the richest people on the planet, and not tycoons and their families who perhaps have never worked a hard day's work in their lives.
If you do a job which is more dirtier, I think you should be paid more. If you do a more dangerous job, very few people are going to do a dangerous job. They should be paid more. If you do a difficult job, you should be paid more. So the 3D jobs, you know, dangerous, difficult, dirty, these are things where we are stereotyped to say that if you go and collect rubbish, you're only people who are stupid do this kind of work.
Right.
Which is totally wrong, because these are the people, you know, the farmers and all that. If without their work, without their contribution to society, people won't be happy. You know, people can't live happily, you know. So I think this is totally the unequal world we are in. When I used to work with plantation workers, you know, I used to ask them, you know, I'll tell them, you know, why they'll always tell you, you know, we don't want our children to be plantation workers. We want our children to go to the town, work, you know. So right. When you're in the plantation, you think going to the town, working maybe in a factory or somewhere, you'll get better wages. They'll say, I'm working here is my faith. I didn't study well. You know, these are the feelings they got. Right. And how do they resolve this problem? They go to the temple. They go and pray.
Right.
But the only way they can uplift their life is to fight for better wages. Mm-hmm. Okay? But the system, including religion, the moral argument, everything is you must work hard. If you cannot get your salary in an 8-hour job, you do a second job. You do part job, part-time job. You do all jobs. So they make you feel you don't question the system. You just live in it. But I think even from those days, even slavery, you know, today slavery is not acceptable, though it happened somewhere in certain parts. But it is because there are people who oppose the slave system. And today you see that 99%, you know, Oxfam statistics is 99% is fighting the 1%.
Right.
But the 1% controls the resources. They control how we think. The billionaires got so much money, they don't know what to do. No, they want to go to the moon, you know. They want to spend their money, you know. They want to do all those things, but they cannot resolve simple things like poverty with so much of abundance of wealth there, you know.
On the show with me today is S. Arutshelvan, Deputy Chairperson of Parti Socialist Malaysia. After the break, we discuss taxing the rich. Keep it here on Think Left on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Think Left. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is S. Arutshelvan, Deputy Chairperson of Parti Socialist Malaysia. And we're talking about billionaires and the ultra-wealthy. So, Arul, one of the things that we've heard a lot these days, one of the phrases we hear a lot is tax the rich, which is a movement that pretty much demands the ultra-wealthy to pay sufficient taxes. Broadly speaking, Arul, how much taxes do billionaires pay in capitalist countries, and why is it so little? Why are we asking to tax the rich?
You see, even in the Oxfam, in their recent proposal, the way they find solution is increased taxation on rich individuals and companies and greater investment in public services and social protection.
Right.
You see, when we, in the PSM, we did, when Dr. Jayakumar was a member of parliament, we raised a question in parliament. We wanted to know how much are the top 10 richest person, how much they are taxed. Mm-hmm. And the answer we got was, they are protected under the Official Secret Act, they cannot reveal. You know, we don't know how much a billionaire being taxed. Taxation is the best way to take the money from them and, you know, reinvest the money into healthcare and education, public healthcare and all that, you know. And so the question you ask is, we really don't know because they are protected.
Right. So if we don't know how much they're getting, but we know they're being taxed so little, that's why, you know, there's a lot of these gaps that we need to fill. And that's why their wealth keeps increasing and increasing while the rest of the people, like you said, the 99% of the masses suffer. So how are these billionaires gaming the system? Because every time when it's just you and me, my colleagues, my friends, my families, every time when, you know, the new year comes, when it comes to February, March, April, that period, everyone's like, you know, oh my God, I need to file my taxes. I need to pay this. I need to pay that. I need to make sure everything is like in order. And people are paying taxes. So how do the rich, the ultra wealthy, how do they game the system? How do they avoid paying the reasonable amount of tax that they should be paying?
See, one is they park their money in countries, you know. Some countries, they keep their monies there. They don't keep it here. They keep it in some island. And then they have very smart people on how to evade tax. They pay people on how to evade tax. Some of them use the money in charity, which are tax exemption. Because, you know, the government will give you tax exemption if you put money in charity.
Right.
So they create their own foundation. Okay, mm-hmm. So they give you a goodwill, feel good factor, and they use the money and they're tax exempted. So I think this whole system, the billionaires, they protect the politician. Politicians make laws, all of them, they are very united. They make sure taxes in this region drops. So Malaysia, Singapore will be fighting among each other to bring down taxes, to bring in investment. In PSM, we've been telling that ASEAN countries, ASEAN people, we should set a corporate tax, a certain percentage. We shouldn't go below that. We should have an understanding so that the companies, wherever they go in Southeast Asia, they'll have to pay the same amount of tax. So there's no way of running away.
Right. Arul, I want to talk a little bit more about that because if we hone in on Malaysia, right, corporate taxes, I mean, it's not just Malaysia, all over the world. But let's say we look at Malaysia, in the 1980s, our corporate tax was about at 40%. Today, corporate tax is at 24%. And there's always talk about reducing it even further. Why has there been such a significant drop since the 80s? We see in the 80s, 40%, now 24%, that's half. Why is there a drop? And what is the impact towards all of us, the 99% people in society or the 90%, the masses? What is the impact of this declining corporate taxes?
This is the result of neoliberalism.
Right.
If you look at historically, you know, when there was an Eastern Bloc, when Soviet Union was very strong and all that, you have a two bipolar world, right? You have the Eastern Bloc and the Western Bloc.
Right.
And because of that, there is a lot of state involvement. In the Eastern Bloc, education is free, healthcare is free and all that. So in the Western Bloc, the welfare system was very good actually. Because right. They have to fight, you know. But what happened, neoliberalism is, they have started to become one world because the Soviet Union collapsed. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, what we saw is the rise of Thatcherism and Reaganism, you know. Thatcher, Reagan, and of course in Malaysia, Mahathir. What they did is now all those before this the government is paying, now they create private hospitals, private universities. So in that sense, they give you a feeling that the private sector is playing a bigger role, building housing and all that. And because of that, taxes are reduced. So like they are, you know, so the government's role now becomes smaller and the company's capital roles become bigger and they get tax exemption, tax and all that. So that is one. Another one, so this happens all over the world, you know. So investors want to come to a country, they have to compete. So to bring in investors to Malaysia, we have to ensure our taxes are lower. So there's a competition, you know, the fight to the bottom, not to make our life better. So Singapore will try to bring in corporate taxes low. Malaysia will compete with Singapore. Philippines will compete. How to bring the taxes low? Only now, you know, with the COVID and all that, only the last 1-2 years, there was 1% increase of taxes. That is because, like we are, PSM is saying, like now, like Khairi Jamaluddin is talking about increasing the healthcare to 5%. Currently, it's about 2%, you know.
Right.
And you know, 2% is so low, you know. This is the system, how they have created this whole situation. And the government role has been reduced drastically. Lah. And that is why now for us now, the fight to increase taxes, I think this is what happening in US, Bernie Sanders.
Right.
Just one week ago, they made a law that, you know, minimally they must be taxed 15%. And you know, Biden said this is the biggest achievement they made all, you know. Finally, they got 15% minimum. Those who are hiding, minimum, you'll be taxed 15% in the US. So I think in Malaysia, for example, we are saying that public health care to increase to from four, currently 2% to 4% on public health care, if you just increase the tax of 40 richest percent in Malaysia, you have enough money to pay even pension scheme for those who are 65 to 70 years old, pension scheme. You will have enough money to pay basic income for those who don't earn. You will have all those money, you know. So that money needs to be taken away. And you need to take the money from the rich. Where else you need to take right. the money from? You have to take it from the 1% and give it to the masses out there.
Absolutely. Now, earlier you also brought up this idea of, you know, rich people doing charity. And indeed, you know, like you mentioned, all the top, many of the ultra-wealthy people, they do a lot of charity work. They have a lot of foundations. They, you know, they donate money and things like that. A lot of people look at this and say, that's great, what, you know, like you become rich and then you're giving millions and millions of dollars to Cancer Foundation, your foundation, you start this charity, that charity and all of that. But do these efforts actually help the masses?
I think this is what Rosa Luxemburg spoke about. She says, they ask the rich to do charity, you know, mm-hmm. but we are talking about eradicating of the poor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you create a classless society, then you don't have rich and poor. Right. Then you don't have to do charity, you see? It's a very ideological question, you know? Like, for example, in the caste system in India, you have Gandhi and Periyar, you know?
Yep.
Gandhi talks about, he doesn't oppose the caste system, but he says the Brahmin caste must help the poor. Whereas Periyar says you must abolish the caste system, you know? You know, asking the rich to pay taxes is just a reform way so that their money, because the money doesn't trickle down to the poor. So a lot of these big, big billionaires, they start this charity and they create this image that they are helping the poor. But why does poverty happens in this place? Are their own workers, you know, most of them, their own workers or their subcontracted workers, are they being paid properly? If they increase the wages of the average worker, or the farmer or whatever, I think the problem will be solved. If you want an equitable society, then what are we talking about? Okay? We are talking that everybody should be living happily. Everybody should have very good healthcare. Other day, Harris talks about how difficult for the poor to get cancer treatment. Okay?
Right.
He says, if you're rich, maybe you can get good cancer treatment, you know? So it all boils down to, we live in a very inequal society. As long as there's an inequality, you know, you have to make it equal. And I think this is the task ahead of us. And if you look at, so the whole question is, billionaires should do what I call a class suicide, okay? If they want to create a better world, then the money has to come down, you know. It's not going to come down easily. That's why there is a struggle. That's why the unions are fighting, you know. Like today, we went and fighting to make sure that people are just paid 1,500 a month. Minimum wage. To get a minimum wage implemented, you have to do so much of protest and, you know, you have to raise the issue so high. I think there's something wrong if very few people earn so much money and the majority of the people don't have enough end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
If there's famine in Africa or some countries, why is it happening? And if you look at all the wars which is happening in the world, it's an economical war. Whatever expansion or whatever is done to increase wealth, you know. And that's what everything boils down to. So if you want a more equal society, wealth should be equitably distributed. That is why this movement of the 99% is very critical, I think.
Before we wrap this conversation up, would you have a final message for us?
If you look at the existence of human society, they say during the primitive age, primitive economy, that was the most stable, you know, everybody was happy. But after that, you know, that's the longest period of time in world history. You know, everybody goes, they go and hunt, they get their food, they share it equally, you know, they don't accumulate wealth, you know. Then you have inequality stages, the slave system, it went off. Then you have the feudal system. You know, now you have very few monarchs in the world. Now we have the capitalist system, you see. And the capitalist system has created an unequal world. It has alienated workers. It has made workers work long hours. So then the whole struggle goes to make less working hours so we have more time for art and poetry, you know. With technology today, you have enough food to feed the world, you know. But then it is not equally distributed properly, you know. So we have to resolve that. There's some people who are earning filthy rich, obscene salaries. Why do you need someone, you know? I remember someone asked me this question. That's it. They said, how many stomach do a billionaire has? Okay, end of the day, you need to have your breakfast, your lunch, your dinner. Maybe you have your tea in between. You need money for that.
Right.
But if you earn like 500,000 ringgit a month salary, why do you need so much money? Why do you need so much money? Do you need to eat extra? Or what? Why do you need so much money? Is it? So the people which having this 500,000 ringgit a month salary, what they're going to do with the extra money? They're going to find ways to make more money. So you need a movement where we need to address this. Of course, in today's world, taxation is the best way,
right,
to actually force them to pay the money. And to do that, it's not going to become a voluntary thing. It has to come. There must be movement. That's why all over the world, there is movement fighting for workers' rights, farmers' rights, people fighting to save the environment. In one side, people are trying to destroy the environment, want to cut down the forest to make money. Then you have other people protecting the forest. Today, we talk about climate change. Why is climate change happening? Nobody talks about putting a handbrake to development, because with the current technology, you need to actually work lesser hours and make sure that everybody can earn a good salary and we should have enough food for everybody. But for that to happen, we need to fight. And a struggle need to take place. And I think that is the class war which we continue to see and which will continue to happen.
And on that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Arun.
Thank you, Dachan.
That was S. Arun Chelvan, Deputy Chairperson of Parti Socialist Malaysia. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can also check us out on podcasts. We're available on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dachan Johan, and this has been Think Left on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.